Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a totally exonerated president to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the cherry-picking fallacy, also known as selective observation and ignoring inconvenient data.
So there's quite a bit of overlap here between the cherry-picking fallacy and one we did a few weeks ago, which was lying with statistics. They're often used in the same in a similar way. But cherry-picking is where the person making the argument ignores a large amount of evidence which might cast doubt on what they're saying and chooses only the parts that make their claim sound plausible, basically. So it's it's more commonly used where actually the weight of evidence is against you, but there's things that you can pick out, if you're careful, which actually make it sound like you are right. Okay. Our first example is from Trump's first address to the joint session of Congress, essentially his first State of the Union, but it's not State of the Union when it's your first year as president. And he managed an impressive total of three cherry-picked statements within just 27 words.
Tonight, as I outline the next steps we must take as a country, we must honestly acknowledge the circumstances we inherited. 94 million Americans are out of the labor force. Over 43 million people are now living in poverty. And over 43 million Americans are on food stamps.
So he's setting up this situation where he's claiming that he inherited a mess from Obama, basically. Everything went to shit under Obama, and he's got to sort it out. And these are the terrible statistics that he's quoting.
Yeah.
The thing is, he is quoting them out of context. They're true, but they sound worse than they should do if you actually know what you're talking about. So just for an example, that 94 million out of the labor force statistic, it is pretty true, that, but out of the labor force, while it sounds like a way of saying unemployed, it's not the same thing at all.
Yeah.
It actually covers basically anyone who isn't working, which means that includes the 44 million retired Americans, the 13.2 million who were still in school and college, 15.3 million Americans who are disabled and unable to work, and 13.3 million who are stay-at-home parents and not looking for work. In fact, basically, at that time, only 7.8 million Americans were out of work and looking for work.
Out of
his 94 million, the number that he quotes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What?
So by just choosing that number, that big sounding number, out of the 320-ish million Americans, that sounds huge. That sounds like a really big thing. But actually, it accounts for a lot more than just the people who are actually looking for work. And in fact, at that point, the unemployment rate was under 5%, which represented a steady rise in job growth under Obama from 2010, when the unemployment rate hit 10%. So what Trump was inheriting was a very good upward trend of new jobs.
Yeah, right.
Which is not the implication that he was giving at all with that statement.
No. So he's cherry-picked that figure.
Yeah, he's chosen a way of expressing that data that makes it sound as bad as it could be, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not untrue what he said. It's just misleading.
Just nobody ever talks about it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he also mentioned in that two more statistics, which are 43 million Americans living in poverty and the same number on food stamps, 43 million Americans on food stamps.
Right.
Those again, accurate statistics. Mm. What he doesn't say is that those numbers are actually the lowest since 2010. at which point there were nearly 49 million Americans living in poverty, right. About 48 million on food stamps. So again, he's not inheriting a mess. He's inheriting a thing that definitely you still need to do something about. You know, that's something that needs to change.
Yeah.
But it's something that was on the right trajectory when he came into office.
So it wasn't something that was made worse by Obama.
No, no.
Which is what he's kind of implying.
Yeah, both of those metrics improved dramatically under Obama. But of course, that's context that he doesn't want to give to those numbers.
Yeah.
So, second example, which is it's slightly different in a way because it's choosing to highlight a particular event, and in this case, it's about the death of 20-year-old University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts, who was killed allegedly by an illegal immigrant from Mexico. And Trump went on Twitter and said this.
Molly Tibbetts, an incredible young woman, is now permanently separated from her family. A person came in from Mexico illegally and killed her.
Now, as far as we know, that is true. And obviously, as he has done a number of times with specific cases of illegal immigrants committing crimes, he is implying that this is a big deal, a big problem. Obviously, it's a big problem that anyone get killed at all. But he's suggesting that it's the illegal immigrant element of this that is the problem.
Yeah.
Which, again, completely ignores the context of this and where crimes committed by immigrants fit in with general crime in the US.
And his implication is that all immigrants are murderers and rapists and people that we need to keep out, and that's why he needs funding for the wall, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, absolutely. Immediately following on from that we just played, he says we need the wall, we need immigration control. And basically there's around 19,000 homicides in the US per year. Around 2.5% of those, approximately, numbers are very difficult to get hold of for this, but and around 2.5% of those are committed by illegal immigrants. So, yes, it's a problem, but the immigration part of it isn't really the problem.
Isn't
the huge number of murders is the problem, and there are probably other things that need to be done that would have a greater impact, addressing issues of poverty and things in inner cities and gun control, for example, things like that, actually would have more of an impact on the number of people killed if you're really caring about individual cases, as opposed to just trying to choose the ones that...
Because that's what he's... exactly. So he's cherry-picking the one case of somebody... One person that, however many people that same day got killed elsewhere, a homegrown nutcases with guns, you know, we'll just ignore that for the moment because that's not an immigration problem. So he's chosen the one which, you know, and it's an appalling use of the poor grief of the family.
Yeah. And the Tibbetts family publicly asked him to stop using her.
Yeah.
As a political tool, essentially.
Oh, my God. The first example reminds me of what happens in British politics, which is that the incoming administration always blames the outgoing administration for all the crap. And the Tory party still, even though we've had two changes of leaders, three maybe, since they got in, they still refer to the mess we inherited. Yeah. And you think, well, you've been in power for 12 years, why haven't you sorted it out?
But especially with Trump, that any positive things at all are obviously nothing to do with what they inherited, but all to do with Trump.
No.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
So the issue I've had with thinking about the cherry-picking thing is that in order to kind of talk about it, you've got to have, like you've been having to fill in the reason why this is cherry-picked. It's because politicians sound, when they do this, they sound very convincing, and you're aware only of the things that they tell you, and you go, blimey, that's all right, or crikey, that's... I didn't know that, and what a good job you're in power now, because what you inherited was awful, and somebody needs to do something about it. But we are blessed, if that's the right word, with the whole thing around the last general election we had in this country, which brought us to this sorry state that we're in now, i.e. Theresa May being in power. So in 2017, there was a general election called, and I think it was Nick Robinson who asked Theresa May, which part of the 20% boost in polls led you to want to have a general election? So she's currently at the point at which she called this. She's thinking, right, okay, so we've had the referendum. Cameron's resigned because it didn't go the way he thought it would. I've taken on the reins as leader. I'm way ahead of Labour in the polls. So what I'll do is go to the country for a general election, get voted in with a large majority, which will give me the mandate to go through with the Brexit referendum, or the processes to bring about the Brexit that was signalled as being wanted by the Leave voters who beat the Remain voters. So she went out, and this is what happened. Here are the numbers that happened.
Compared to 2015, Mrs. May has lost 12 seats, while Mr. Corbyn has gained 29. The Conservatives have 318 seats, Labour hold 261. That leaves the Tories short of the 326 seats needed for a bare majority.
So it didn't go according to plan. But this doesn't mean that the cherry picking on both sides, this is what happens with any election. Everybody claims it as a victory, even though only one of them's got, because we've got a first-past-the-post system here. We don't have a system of proportional representation. So really only one party ever wins. But everybody claims a victory, moral or otherwise. So given those numbers and how that kind of works out is that actually Labour gained 77 councils and the Tories lost 33 councils. And that led to the number of seats being the way that we've just heard. So the former Conservative chairman, a guy fabulously called Eric Pickles, who looks like he eats a lot of pickles.
looks like he's a lot of cake. I don't know about pickles.
He does. Yeah. Maybe if he had a few more pickles, he wouldn't be quite so cakey. Exactly. So the reporter whose voice we just heard is a guy called Krishnan Gurumurthy, and this is on Channel 4, UK's TV channel. And their news, which kind of is quite confrontational when, you know, they don't pussyfoot around when it comes to talking to politicians. So this is what Krishnan Gurumurthy asks or says to Eric Pickles.
Eric Pickles, this is a disaster. She can't go on, can she?
I think she can go on. It's not been a very happy night for the Conservative Party, but Labour didn't win. We've got the largest number of seats, and I think she's entitled to try and form a government to deliver Brexit for the British people.
Why is she entitled to anything when she gambled and lost?
Because she's got more seats and winning
it's
elections.
It's a pretty technical sort of entitlement. Well, the party is entitled, but not Theresa May.
No. That's how our system works. Our system works is the more MPs you get, the right you have to try and form a government. And if she has the confidence of those MPs, she'll get through.
So there we have it. Yeah, as Eric Pickles is quite right, you know, the more goals you score, you're going to, if you score the most goals, you win. So even though they lost a great deal, and even Krishnan Gurumurthy is saying, well, it's a disaster, she gambled and lost. Well, she did big time. So it's a win that looks like a loss. So the cherry picking happening from Krishnan Gurumurthy there by saying, well, look, if you look at this bit, then it looks like they lost. And Eric Pickles says, well, yeah, but we still got more seats than Labour, so we won. With the same figures, here is what the former London Mayor Ken Livingstone says about the same result.
This is the first time for 25 years Labour's gone into election with a genuine Labour programme, building council houses, public sector investment, and it's connected. I mean, it's 43% voted Tory and 40% Labour. If there is another election, we've only got to get a 2% swing and Jeremy will be in Downing
Street. Isn't the point you lost? That's what Labour supporters don't seem to be getting. Lost the election.
Well,
against a chaotic Conservative Party, a disastrous manifesto, a weak Prime Minister, you lost.
He's got a point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's Ken's. Well, I guess, you know, cherry picking is almost the seed, if you will, using the plant based metaphor. It's the seed for spin. So you pick your cherry, you plant that, and there you can spin the results the way you want it to go. So Ken is saying, well, it's a win. We've got 40%. It's the highest, you know, it connected with, for the first time, for the socialist manifesto, we connected all that stuff. And then Christian has to kind of remind him, well, yeah, but you lost. Of course, the next example today, we're recording this on March the 29th, 2019, which was the day that Theresa May has said over 100 times was the day that the UK would leave the EU.
Happy Brexit Day.
Happy Brexit Day. And in fact, the actual deadline was about an hour and three quarters ago.
Yeah, so we're no longer in the EU, are we? That's what's happening.
We're no longer in the EU, which was enshrined in law on the... on the day of the referendum. But today, Mrs. May lost the third vote on her withdrawal agreement deal by 286 votes to 344, a majority of 58. So this version of the withdrawal agreement, which I notice is now being shortened to WA, which having just spent 2 weeks in Western Australia, is quite weird to see because everything else was... there. And in Western Australia, they say that WA means wait a while. So this deal that lost the vote is a cherry-picked version of the deal that lost the previous two votes. So there was no political direction, no political declaration, which includes the troubling implications of a hard border between the Republic of Ireland, which is in the EU, and Northern Ireland, which is in the UK and would not be in the EU, and therefore would necessitate some sort of hard border, which would return us to the time in the 70s when there was a hard border, and, you know, until the likes of the Labour Party.
Yes, with the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So there
was
years,
that was problematic. Yeah. So even with the cherry picked version, which didn't include that difficult bit, it lost. Further cherry picking readings of this result of a loss has enabled the Tories. I noticed today on Twitter, they've started posting Labour just voted to stop Brexit posters, little things with Jeremy Corbyn looking particularly hard, actually. you wouldn't want to mess with him. It says on the @Conservatives Twitter feed, it says, Labour will never honour the referendum result. We were supposed to leave the EU today. They just voted against Brexit, which some people very quickly, straight away said, so did 34 of your MPs, which is true. 34 of the Conservatives voted against the deal. And somebody else points out 34 out of 314, that's nearly 11% of Tory MPs. So there's a bit of cherry picking going on. They're picking just the Labour members who voted against Theresa May's deal, ignoring the inconvenient truth that 11% of the Conservative members voted against it as well.
It's a weird attempt as well, isn't it? Because basically the reason that they don't want a second referendum is because it seems very, very likely that the majority of the of Britain's voters now would choose to stay. Because very few people are going to have gone from stay to leave over the last 2 years. Because it's been such an amazing shit show. But definitely some of the previous Leave voters will have said, look, this isn't what I voted for. Let's not do it.
Yeah. So exactly. And now that some of the details have been panned out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So essentially by saying Labour just voted to stop Brexit, what they're saying is, hello, majority of the UK, Labour just did what you would like. It's bizarre.
Yeah. There's another bit of cherry picking going on The independent newspaper reported today, Downing Street insiders said that while it was obviously disappointing the government had not won the vote on Friday, there was a clear movement towards the Prime Minister's position. What? So there's a cherry picking of the result. The fact that she's lost three times now, but she's lost by a smaller margin each time. So the number of votes against are getting
more
fewer.
More votes eventually.
Exactly. Eventually, but we'll get it over the line. You think, hang on, why, what? But you can't do that with the referendum, even though the referendum, the margin of the difference between Leave and Remain was actually within the percentage of the margin of error. So what? Yeah. Makes you proud to be British.
G'day, mate. How you doing? It's a fallacy in the wild. It's a fallacy. It's a fallacy in the wild. It's a fallacy. All together now. It's a fallacy in the wild. It's a fallacy. It's a fallacy in the wild. It's a fallacy.
Very Antipodean. Well done.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. Guess where I've been for 2 weeks. Yeah. That's the famous track from the disgraced former TV presenter from the 1970s on British television, Rolf Harris. Yeah. In fact, I think there's only one 70s entertainer that hasn't been disgraced. That's Basil Brush.
Give it time. So... In the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective. So the first one is a clip from Iron Man 2, which is actually a Senate hearing towards the beginning of the film, where Rhodey has created a report about the Iron Man suit and its kind of benefits and drawbacks to the US military. And then he's asked this question in the Senate hearing.
I have before me a complete report on the Iron Man weapon compiled by Colonel Rhodes. And Colonel, for the record, can you please read page 57, paragraph 4?
You're requesting that I read specific selections from my report, Senator?
Yes, sir.
It was my understanding that I was going to be testifying in a much more comprehensive and detailed manner.
I understand. A lot of things have changed today.
You do understand that reading a single paragraph out of context does not reflect
just read it, Colonel. I do. Thank you.
Very well. As he does not operate within any definable branch of government, Iron Man presents a potential threat to the security of both the nation and to her interests. I did, however, go on to summarize that the benefits of Iron Man far outweigh the liabilities,
That's enough.
That it would
that's
be in
enough,
our interest
Colonel.
To fold
that's
Mr.
Enough.
Stark into the existing chain of command.
So... In this Senate hearing in Iron Man 2, the senator, played by the late, great Gary Shandling, is trying to get Rhodey to say negative things about Iron Man by choosing the one paragraph in his report about how great the Iron Man suit is that says, yeah, maybe it's not so great, and then tries to get him to stop saying anything positive about it. So... And this is
his character wasn't called Bill Barr.
It's kind of similar. Yeah. So Rhodey is trying to give a fair context to this, and as he says in the clip, he was expecting when he was called to testify that he would be able to give a kind of a more full picture.
He's even pointing out that, you know, if you get me to read one paragraph, then that's going to skew the whole thing. It is not a representative paragraph of the rest of the report. Yeah.
This is not atypical in how people tend to use evidence. They will choose just the bit that makes their point, even if it doesn't represent the whole. And another way in which cherry picking is sometimes used is in religion. Here's an example from The West Wing, which Jed Bartlett points it out to a right-wing Christian talk show host.
I like your show. I like how you call homosexuality an abomination.
I don't say homosexuality is an abomination, Mr. President. The Bible does.
Yes, it does. Leviticus
18:22.
Chapter and verse. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions while I had you here. I'm interested in selling my youngest daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. She's a Georgetown sophomore, speaks fluent Italian, always cleared the table when it was her turn. What would a good price for her be? While thinking about that, can I ask another? My chief of staff, Leo McGarry, insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly says he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself, or is it okay to call the police? Here's one that's really important, because we've got a lot of sports fans in this town. Touching the skin of a dead pig makes one unclean, Leviticus 11:7. If they promise to wear gloves, can the Washington Redskins still play football? Can Notre Dame? Can West Point? Does the whole town really have to be together to stone my brother John for planting different crops side by side? Can I burn my mother in a small family gathering for wearing garments made from two different threads? Think about those questions, would you? One last thing. While you may be mistaking this for your monthly meeting of the ignorant tight-ass club, in this building, when the president stands, nobody sits.
That's a fantastic scene.
Nice.
So, yeah, the point that Bartlett is making is that this right-wing talk show host or TV presenter is choosing to vilify homosexuality because of Leviticus. She specifically mentions Leviticus when he brings it up. But there's a lot of other things in Leviticus and in the surrounding chapters that typically today, even evangelical Christians don't have a problem with. So why are they picking that? And
And it's almost that if you choose the chapter and the verse, it kind of, you know, rather than just being, oh, well, it says so in the Bible, in the Bible, if you choose the chapter and verse, somehow that lends even more weight to the truth of the matter and the fact that we should accept it for real. And he kind of debunks all of that as well by saying, well, these have got specific chapter and verse references, and surely we should adopt those. Like, should I burn my mother for wearing a garment made of two different cloths?
Now, to completely steel man this, it's only fair to say that Bartlett is wrong about some of the stuff he says. Firstly, and most trivially, footballs aren't made of pigskin. They're actually actually cowhide, and therefore fine. Ah, they're clean. But also, sewing crops of two different types together and wearing garments of two different types, although they are both forbidden, there isn't a specific penalty laid down in the Bible for those. So saying that the whole town has to get together to stone his brother, or that they can burn his mother in a family gathering, is a little bit over the top. He's overdoing
it.
That said, there are things which the whole town has to get together to stone people for in the Bible, including disobeying your parents in Deuteronomy 21:18, and a woman not being a virgin on her wedding night in Deuteronomy 22:13-21.
Okay.
For victims of rape who didn't scream loud enough in a city.
Right.
In Deuteronomy 22:20-24, all these people need to be killed by stoning. And in most cases, the whole town needs to get together to do it. So although he did overstate the penalties for some of the things that he was talking about, it is in line with other things which, generally speaking, people don't at least actually do the things that the Bible says, even if they may still disapprove. Yeah. So I looked up, because one of the answers that comes from people, from Christians often, is that, well, these are Old Testament laws. And some of them are completely different. Some of them don't need to be followed. So I looked up on Google, how do we know which Old Testament laws we still need to follow? So I found a site called crosswork.com. It's a Christian apologetic site. I don't know how big it is in the Christian community. I don't know how influential it is. But it's an example of the kinds of arguments that Christians have against invoking these kinds of arguments, against saying, well, you know, why do you talk about homosexuality and not these other things?
Yeah.
One argument that is often given is that Leviticus isn't the only place where it talks about homosexuality. It talks about it, Paul talks about it in Romans and Corinthians. But key is Dr. What's-her-name in the clip specified Leviticus. So she in this right. argument is talking about the Old Testament. So it's yeah. not okay to just say, well, Bartlett's arguments aren't valid because the things he brought up were Old Testament and those laws were changed when Jesus came along.
So was that one? Exactly. That one was in the Old Testament as well.
On this site, crosswalk.com, a person wrote to the pastor on the site saying, how do we know which Old Testament laws should be acknowledged and which ones can be ignored? My pastor says that some laws were cultural, like eating shellfish, and others were spiritual, like adultery and witchcraft. So the pastor, he explains the difference between ceremonial laws about, you know, how to build an ark and things like that, which were just for the time, governmental laws, which were about Israel and aren't important. But then his third category is moral laws, which transcend time and behavior. Which he includes the Ten Commandments. And he says, for example, you're not allowed to tattoo yourself, is one of the rules in the Bible, Leviticus 19:28. Do not cut your bodies for the dead or put tattoo marks upon yourselves. I am the Lord. So he says that there are tattoos that are probably fine. You know, you shouldn't have tattoos that glorify Satan. Christian tattoos are probably fine, and neutral tattoos like Dallas Cowboys or whatever, they're probably fine. So that's all right.
And Dallas Cowboys is an old football team, but not that old.
So my point is, he is choosing. He is picking which rules to follow and which rules not to follow. But he says, here's how I reached my conclusions. He has a paragraph in his article, and it says, while the passage in Leviticus says no tattoos, it also says in Leviticus 19:27, do not cut the hair at the sides of your head or clip off the edges of your beard. It also declares in Leviticus 19:26, do not eat any meat with blood still in it. Of course, very few of us today believe that getting a haircut or enjoying a steak cooked rare is inherently evil. In the same way, tattoos are not inherently evil. So his argument for how he reached his conclusions is that there are also things in Leviticus which people today think, that's not a problem.
That sort of begs the question.
Yeah.
Almost.
Absolutely, yeah.
You're going, okay, well, how do you know that that's not a problem?
Exactly.
Well, that's because it's similar to this one.
Exactly.
Which people don't find a problem. Well, people don't find homosexuality a problem.
Exactly. His argument is today some of the things in Leviticus are fine and some of them are not. And the things that are not are the things that we don't like. That's basically
the things
he didn't say that.
Things that we
but
don't like.
It's the thing. In large part still say, you know, this is an abomination and it can't continue. Are the things that they don't want to happen. Not the things that God says you can't do, because there's loads of those.
Yeah.
Prawns are an abomination.
Yeah.
Unless you are going to follow all of the rules, then the reasons that you personally have for choosing which rules you follow and which rules don't amount largely to cherry picking.
So my example that I've bunged in here is not dissimilar in the timescale, is in my quest ever to find a way of countering these arguments. So Jeb Bartlett did a good job there of just pointing out similar things on the same cherry tree, as it were. You know, you've picked that one, but also in the same book, you know, not too far away, it also says this. So why have you chosen that one? This one is, you know, a little bit political. It's the People's Front of Judea in Life of Brian.
They bled us white, the bastards. They taken everything we had, and not just from us, from our fathers, and from our fathers' fathers.
And from our fathers' fathers' fathers.
Yeah.
And from our fathers' 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 fathers.
You're right, Stan, don't labour the point. And what have they ever given us in return?
The aqueduct.
What?
The aqueduct.
Oh, yeah, they did give us that. That's true, yeah.
And the sanitation.
Oh, yeah, the sanitation, Reg. Remember what the city used to be like?
Yeah, all right, I'll grant you, the aqueduct and sanitation are two things the Romans have done.
And the roads.
Well, yeah, obviously the roads. I mean, the roads go without saying, don't they? But apart from the sanitation, the aqueduct and the roads...
Irrigation.
Medicine. Education. Yeah, all right, fair enough.
And the wine.
Yeah, that's something we'd really miss, Reg, if the Romans left.
Public baths. And it's safe to walk in the streets at night now, Reg.
Yeah, they certainly know how to keep order. Let's face it, the only ones who could in a place like this.
All right, but apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, roads, a fresh water system and public health, what have the Romans ever done for us?
Brought peace?
Oh, peace! Shut up!
So there you go. That's how you counter a cherry pick. I've dubbed that a reverse cherry pick. So it's when somebody does that specific list, like Jed Bartley did successfully, is to just point out all the other occurrences of the things that, in this case, the Romans have provided you. You know, so I love that. It's a rhetorical question. And then there's that pause, which is just a delicious pause. And it goes, the aqueduct? It's
like, basically, what they're doing is providing context. Yeah. That's all it is. And that's how you beat cherry picking is and it's not always easy to do because, as we talked up at the front, it's a lot quicker to pick one fact out that makes the point you want to make. And you do have to be careful not to do literally a reverse cherry pick and just pick a fact that is out of context that supports your argument, but actually put the original fact in a wider context and say, but look at these things also that are the same as what you're saying, but actually provide more information and are less misleading.
So we're gonna play fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
I'm on a high.
I think you're in a... are you on two in a row? And you've got...
Two, or even three. I'm not sure we get that far.
You are currently above chance. So... You can't drop below chance. If you win this one, then you're at 38%. Yeah. If you lose it, then you're down to exactly chance.
Brilliant.
We'll see how this goes. Great. So
you see what I would do in looking over the past episodes, I would cherry pick the ones that I'd won. And so you see, I'm consistently winning.
Yeah, those are the only ones you're going to tweet out, aren't they? The ones you've won. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Won another one. Yes. Yeah. And then people will go, but what about the ones you didn't? Yeah. Well,
okay. So,
well, apart from the ones I didn't.
So the theme, this week's quotes are a lot shorter than usual.
Yeah.
And the theme is about nicknames.
Oh, okay.
And I've cherry picked some quite lame nicknames because Trump loves his nicknames. Right. He loves to come up with a good nickname for someone. So, statement number one, and you can guess who this is about. I said, we're going to give you a new nickname because Chaos is not a good nickname. So we changed his name, called him Mad Dog.
Okay, which is a much better nickname, obviously. Yeah.
Statement number two, Nancy Pelosi, or Nancy as I call her, she doesn't want to hear the truth. He kind of ran out of steam.
Okay. Yeah.
Number three.
Yeah.
Even my enemies say that Jeff Sessions, who I call Mr. Magoo, by the way, should have told me he was going to recuse himself.
Okay. Right. Well, yeah. Now, I've got a feeling that number two is real because he doesn't call Nancy Pelosi anything other than Nancy. But whether he actually said that, Nancy, as I call her, wouldn't be, but that's kind of the opposite of his, or as the saying goes, isn't it? It's good. Yeah, it's like, oh, as I call her, Nancy. Yeah. So does everybody else. Yeah. We're going to give you a new nickname because Chaos is not a good nickname. He is. So we changed his name to Mad Dog. So, I've got a feeling he's already called Mad Dog. Okay, even my name is Jeff Sessions, who I call Mr. Magoo, by the way, should have told me he's going to recuse himself. Okay, does he call him Mr. Magoo? See, that sounds more like Trump than the first one. So I think he's already called Mad Dog. So I think number one is the one that you made up.
Okay, so... You think number two is real?
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi, or Nancy, as I call her. Which, that is real.
No.
Nancy Pelosi, or Nancy as I call her, she doesn't want to hear the truth.
Why would you even stop to say that? Why? All that executive time he's had to come
That's
up with
a
nickname,
with.
And he can't. Because he can't, because she's the only, she's an adult. That's why. She's the adult in the room, and she's going to take no shit from him. So she can't. So he stops mid-sentence and says, just to remind us, Nancy, as I call her, we know because you just did. What?
It's so bizarre.
Because that's the gap where he would normally stick in Pocahontas or
Horse Face or something like that.
He
didn't remember until halfway through the sentence that he hadn't already come up with a nickname for her, basically. He was just putting, okay,
yeah.
I'll stop here. I'll say my nickname. Oh, I haven't got a nickname. I'll just say Nancy.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't think of one. Yeah, sorry. He just got, No, okay. Can't think. Give me a moment. Can't think of one. Right.
So you think
that
number three
is, brilliant, isn't
is
it?
Real? And number three is?
Yeah.
Fake news.
Oh, well done. No, that's, utterly convincing.
It has been rumoured.
Because he is.
That he called Jeff Sessions Mr. Magoo. But he denies
it. Yeah, I'd go along with that. Yeah.
In fact, he tweeted.
Yeah.
The Washington Post said, I refer to Jeff Sessions as Mr. Magoo and Rudd Rosenstein as Mr. Peepers. This is according to people to whom the president has spoken. There are no such people, and I don't know these characters. Just more fake and disgusting news to create ill will. So not only does he not call Jeff Sessions Mr. Magoo, he's claiming he doesn't even know who that is.
Who they are.
Mr. Magoo is. One of the most popular cartoon characters during Trump's childhood. He's never even heard of it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that.
No. Given how much television he bloody watches, he would have known exactly who that is.
And Mr.
And
Peepers,
how apt,
which was a popular sitcom in the 50s as well, so.
Yeah. And actually how apt Mr. Magoo would have been to call Jeff Sessions.
I don't know why
Magoo.
He would deny it. It's so weird, because it's not like he was being particularly nice to Jeff Sessions at the time.
No.
It's very strange.
That very good.
Which means
again,
that number
convincing.
One is real.
I said, we're going to give you a new nickname because chaos is not a good nickname. So we changed his name. Called him Mad Dog.
Now that did not
Why
happen.
Is that even something that...
It didn't happen.
No.
It's not. And the reason we know it didn't happen is because Jim Mattis has been called Mad Dog since at least 2004. And he was called it by the press, and he doesn't particularly like it. No one who knows him calls him Mad Dog, apparently, except Trump, who thinks it's brilliant. Apparently, it came from the fact that he says things like, you should be kind and polite to everyone you meet, but figure out ways to kill them. And like a true warrior wears his enemy's skin as a suit or something like that. So he's pretty scary, but...
Yeah,
that name was not given to him by Trump. Also,
by Trump.
Chaos,
no.
Not a nickname. It is his call sign.
No.
It was his call sign in the military. That's not a nickname. That's not what that means.
No.
So,
and also, why is the president spending presidential time as the leader of the free world
coming up with nicknames
and then telling us about it?
So what that means is... Yeah. That you are now at 7 out of 21, which is exactly a third.
A perfect third. So, fantastic.
So exactly as good as if you just guessed at random before I even read out the quotes.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. I think I'll do that next week. I was like, number three. I'm ready out yet. No, it's going to be number three. Yeah.
So,
why'd you say that? Well, I'm just... Yeah.
It's worth a go.
Yeah.
So, podcast listeners, I need your help to fool Mark. If you think you can make up a convincing fake Trump quote, then share this episode on Twitter. Include your quote and the hashtag Fallacious Trump. I'll pick the best one and you'll be podcast famous. So it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called The Mueller Report is Not a Logical Fallacy, but Bill Barr's summary just might be a really good example of cherry picking.
Yeah, who'd have thought? Yeah.
What coincidence.
Yeah.
Because Mueller has finally delivered his report to the Attorney General.
Yeah, might as well have buried it in the ground.
And Bill Barr produced a three-and-a-half-page summary of the findings of the report, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And has been touted in conservative circles as a complete exoneration.
Complete exoneration.
Total vindication.
Yeah.
To the point where not only is Trump totally innocent of everything that he's ever been accused of,
yeah,
but all the people who ever accused him of anything should either be resign or be in prison.
Yeah.
That has been largely the argument. From the left, there's been some disappointment that it wasn't more damning, but largely the reaction has been, okay, can we see the report, please?
Yeah, which is, you know, not an unreasonable request, given how kind of the summary just seems to say, okay, it's this shape, there are this many pages that deal with that, then there are these things that it found, this number of things it found, and this is what those things were detailing when they found those things. And then, like, the last paragraph or so, it just goes, oh, yeah, so based on that, it's fine. It did nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Essentially.
Yeah.
There's a few direct quotes, very few direct quotes from the report, but mostly it is Barr's opinion based on what he presumably had the chance to read over the weekend of the report. And just, if I don't know if there's any conservative listeners, any Republican listeners to this show. It'd be nice if there was.
Yeah,
get in touch and let us know if there are and see what you think about it. But if there are, I'd like you to think about it in terms of if the Starr report for Clinton's impeachment had been delivered to Janet Reno and she read it and provided a summary that said, yes, fine.
It's all right.
There's nothing really, there's no problem. You didn't do anything wrong.
There was a dry cleaning issue. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you have been okay with that?
Yeah.
Or indeed, if there had been any kind of result from Benghazi or a fictional investigation into Obama where the Attorney General just provided a couple of pages summary that said, yeah, there's nothing to see here. This is fine.
That's fine. This is what
you
I thought.
Don't need to worry about it.
No, the report, I've saved you all the bother. You know, there's 200 times this amount to read. I've done it for you. Yeah. And it doesn't actually, strictly speaking, exonerate him entirely, this summary.
It so doesn't, to the extent that one of the quotes specifically says, it does not
exonerate him. Yeah. So how they've jumped from the sentence that is directly quoted in here that says that it does not exonerate him to he is totally exonerated. Well he isn't.
Yeah.
In you know, not totally. There, even if that it's with one bit of non-exoneration, that means he's not totally exonerated. What?
So why do I say this is cherry-picking? Oh, and I should say, actually, before I start here, I'm not a lawyer, don't know very much about this. My reading of this is what we're talking about. But also a lot of what I'm reading is based on a fantastic breakdown of this summary and of what we know from the Opening Arguments podcast.
Oh, okay.
Are listening to this and you don't already listen to Opening Arguments, go and ideally become a patron because they do some fantastic specific episodes for patrons as well.
Yep.
But just listen at least to their last couple of episodes because they're about this and they have a great interview with a law professor called Rand Eliason about this and about what it means and about what the background of it might be. So thanks to them for some of the information that I'm going to be giving and some of the ideas, but largely this is kind of based on my reading of it.
Yep.
And essentially, it's split. The summary is split into two sections, as Barr says the report is, into looking at whether Trump colluded with the Russians on interfering with the 2016 election and whether he then obstructed justice.
Yep.
And the summary says that basically, the special counsel decided that Trump did not collude, did not conspire or coordinate with the Russian government.
Mm-hmm.
The quote in the report, in the summary, is, as the report states, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. That's the full extent of the quote.
Right.
Now, interestingly, that quote starts with a that's the first word.
Yeah.
And the capital T is in brackets. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that in the actual report, it's
coming
not
in
a
the middle of
T.
the sentence. Yes.
Yeah. So Barr is quoting the end of a sentence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Barr's job here is to make his boss look good.
Yeah.
He is a Trump appointee. He got the job because he, absent of any money or solicitation, wrote a 19-page memo about how you really can't indict the president and he can't commit obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that's why he's in the job.
Yeah.
And so his job here is to make this sound as good as it can.
Yeah.
While not lying, because it would be considered, I think it probably would be considered perjury. It certainly would look very bad for him, and he would get in trouble if he said things in this document that were actually lies.
Yeah.
So I think all of the stuff he said in here is true, but very carefully worded and carefully chosen and cherry-picked to express the position that he wants to express. So this line, which again starts with a non-capital T and therefore is the end of a sentence, could possibly be part of a sentence that says something like, while there is a great deal of evidence of, you know, misdeeds by the Trump campaign
and
the investigation did not establish.
Yeah.
Yeah. The point is, we don't know.
Yeah.
So any attempt to speculate at what the first part of that sentence is irresponsible. And it is just as irresponsible to say this means that the president didn't do anything wrong.
There was no collusion. Yeah, yeah. Because it doesn't actually say collusion in there. It did not establish members of the collusion.
Well, collusion isn't a legal term.
Right.
So it shouldn't. And in fact, the Republicans have been using collusion because it's not a
term.
They have been saying no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. Because you can't prove collusion because it's not legal. What you can do is prove conspiracy or coordination or things like that. But it does say the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated. And then very specifically, it says with the Russian government in its election interference activities.
Yeah.
The fact that it says with the Russian government could be quite important.
Yeah.
Because one thing we do know is that Paul Manafort gave polling data to Konstantin Kilimnik, who is a political operative but not part of the Russian government.
Yeah.
We do know that Manafort, Kushner, Don Jr. and others met in Trump Tower with Natalia Veselnetskaya, who is a Russian lawyer who has links to the Kremlin but is not
in
part
the government.
Of the Russian government.
Yeah.
So it may well be completely true to say that the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they weren't involved in colluding or conspiring or coordinating with people in Russia to influence the election.
Or indeed that they did conspire and coordinate with the Russian government in other activities other than election interference activities.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah. So it's, yes.
So we don't know. That's the point. We won't know until we see
the whole thing,
the actual report.
Yeah.
Whether these very specific and very carefully chosen sentences are chosen because there's worse stuff surrounding them that wasn't chosen to be in here, or because they actually represent the full report.
Yeah.
Now, on obstruction of justice, Barr says the report's second part addresses a number of actions by the president, most of which have been the subject of public reporting, that the special counsel investigated as potentially raising obstruction of justice concerns. Now, the fact that it says most of which have been the subject of public reporting means there are some things which might be obstruction of justice which we don't know about yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Which is why you would want to see the report for them, for those things we don't know about.
To see the report to find that out.
Yeah.
So essentially, he says that the report sets out evidence on both sides of the question of obstruction of justice and leaves unresolved what the special counsel views as difficult issues of law and fact concerning whether the president's actions and intent could be viewed as obstruction.
Mm.
So Mueller basically didn't come to a conclusion on whether the president illegally obstructed justice.
Mm.
There is an argument to say that the one reason he may not have come to a conclusion is because he doesn't have that ability, given the Department of Justice's practice of not indicting a sitting president or belief that you can't indict a sitting president.
Yep.
Really, that decision probably should be left up to Congress because they are the ones who will start impeachment proceedings. So it is entirely possible that the special counsel has, in fact, it mentions that the report sets out evidence on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So that means, by definition, there is evidence of obstruction.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there wouldn't be evidence on both sides. There would only be evidence
on one side. Exactly, yeah.
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 So there is evidence of obstruction of justice. Whether that raises to a level of criminality or a level which they could prosecute or a level which they are confident they could prove beyond reasonable doubt is another issue.
Yeah.
And it may possibly be that it would raise to a level where they would prosecute if the person wasn't the president, but that they can't make that decision. They wouldn't make a traditional prosecution decision because of that. So again, there's information we don't know. And this doesn't rule those things out. And then it goes on to say the special counsel states that while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't exonerate.
The information that was found by Mueller does not show that the president didn't do anything wrong.
Yes.
That's very, very clear.
Yeah.
AG Barr, along with Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein, have concluded, based on the evidence that they've read, that the evidence developed during the special counsel's investigation is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offence.
Yep.
So they've decided, not Mueller, that they will not prosecute Trump for obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
And it says, in making this determination, we noted the special counsel recognised the evidence does not establish that the president was involved in an underlying crime related to the Russian election interference. Again, very specific.
Mm.
It doesn't say that the president was not involved in a crime.
Yeah, just one
president was not involved in a crime related to Russian election interference.
Yeah.
And Barr is of the opinion, as I understand it, that obstruction of justice has to be based on a pending or contemplated proceeding, a legal case that is already existing. So that means that if there is something which you did, but the police haven't found out about yet, but that you covered up evidence for, that wouldn't be obstruction of justice because at the time you're covering up the evidence, there isn't
no case
proceeding against you.
Yeah.
That's an unusual reading of the law. Although So again, very specifically, Barr says that they have catalogued to the president's actions, many of which took place in public view, meaning some didn't.
Yep.
And the report identifies no actions that, in our judgment, constitute obstructive conduct, had a nexus to pending or contemplated proceedings, and were done with corrupt intent.
Right.
So that doesn't mean that there are no actions which constitute obstructive conduct and were done with corrupt intent.
Yep.
Just that those ones weren't nexus to a pending or contemplated proceeding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And vice versa, for all three of those options, you could have two of them and not the third one. So the point that I'm trying to make is that all we know for now is that Barr has written some very specific sentences. He has chosen some very specific phrases to quote from the report.
Yeah.
And the other ones there which I've quoted where it says, while this report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him, that starts with a small W as well. Mm. So that's part of a sentence. That's not a full sentence.
Yep.
The evidence does not establish the president was involved in an underlying crime related to Russian election interference. That starts with a small T for the and ends in a comma.
Yeah.
So that's the middle of a sentence.
Yeah. Yep.
In my opinion, if Barr wanted to be very clear that Mueller's report exonerated Trump, and if it in fact did exonerate Trump,
yeah,
there would be full sentences that he could quote.
Yeah,
that would make that case.
And even the one that he does use says it does not exonerate him. So,
well, and that isn't even a full sentence. Exactly. That's the end of a sentence.
Yeah.
So
even the cherry-picked sentence that he's used says it does not exonerate him.
So what we know here, basically, is that there is no indictment from Mueller's office for Trump. He is not indicting anyone further.
Right.
That is not to say that there will be no further indictments, because Mueller has passed on a lot of the things that he uncovered to other agencies. To further investigation by the FBI, to the federal prosecutors at the Southern District of New York and the Eastern District of Virginia, and other investigations are ongoing. There are in fact 19 open investigations into Trump, his family, and his organizations.
Yeah.
So this is not exoneration.
No.
This is a probably partisan, very certainly cherry-picked summary of a report that we've yet to see, which could definitely contain things which would be impeachable offences, even if they don't rise to the level of provable criminality. And a question I think you probably want to ask yourself is your bar for who should be president someone who you can't prove is a criminal? if that's your level,
yeah,
then you can be happy with Trump.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Exactly.
So far, he hasn't been proven to be a criminal.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he can't be impeached. It certainly doesn't mean he didn't do anything wrong. It doesn't mean he didn't act immorally. Clinton was impeached for things which weren't crimes.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
So we've yet to see what will come out of the Mueller report when it does. Barr has said today that he will get a redacted version of the full report, which has been, they are obviously they're going through to remove things that are part of active investigations.
Right.
That might,
I was going to say what's going to be redacted. Yeah.
Yeah. They initially, there was a suggestion that they might pass it to the White House for things that might be executive privilege to be redacted. But it seems like that now isn't going to happen.
That's not the safest course of events.
Yeah, that's bizarre to let the target of an investigation redact their report.
Yeah.
But they've said that will happen around mid-April, if not sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point we will get, or at least Congress will get, and will probably release to the public a version of the Mueller report. And in the meantime, the investigations will continue. Yeah. Maria Butner is just going into court this week. Roger Stone's court case will be coming up. Flynn is still giving evidence. He hasn't he's been convicted. He hasn't been sentenced yet.
Yeah.
There are many things still going on. And I would also say that a lot of Republicans who have been massively celebrating this and saying how, you know, it's proof that they've been right all along and it's been a witch hunt and it's been, you know, the Democrats have just been lying this whole time. Mm. Some of them seem to are saying things like, it must suck to be a Democrat today and things like that. And I would say that it would be fantastic to find out that the president of the United States hadn't committed crimes or colluded with a foreign government to get elected. That would be a really good thing.
That would be a good
thing. I don't think any Democrat is hoping that he did these things.
No.
But I think they are hoping that if he did these things, he will pay a price for it.
Yeah. You know, because that's the truth and justice and the American way, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
On March 15th in Christchurch, New Zealand, a white supremacist terrorist opened fire on a mosque, killing 50 people and live streaming the attack on Facebook. His 74-page manifesto explaining his actions specifically praised Trump as a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose. Within 6 days, New Zealand's kick-ass Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern announced a ban on military-style guns and high-capacity magazines and a government buyback scheme for weapons already in circulation. which seems like it will probably be more effective than thoughts and prayers.
Mm-hmm. Using the Anti-Defamation League's HEAT map, which stands for Hate, Extremism, Anti-Semitism and Terrorism, the Washington Post examined whether there was a correlation between the counties that hosted one of Trump's 275 presidential campaign rallies in 2016 and increased incidents of hate crimes in subsequent months. They found that counties that had hosted a 2016 Trump campaign rally saw a 226% increase in reported hate crimes over comparable counties that did not host such a rally. So when Trump tweeted,
"The fake news media is working overtime to blame me for the horrible attack in New Zealand. They will have to work very hard to prove that one. So ridiculous."
A, they have, and they have. And B, Trump knows that this stuff works. He's just done it in that very tweet.
The NRA is opposing the renewal of the Violence Against Women Act because it contains a provision allowing law enforcement officials to confiscate the guns of convicted domestic abusers. Because, goddammit, if there's anything more important than protecting the lives of abused women, it's allowing their abusers to own guns.
Yeah. Further proof that the GOP just don't get the interweb, Californian Republican Devin Nunes utilised the Streisand effect by having some beef with and suing the Twitter account at Devin Cow, thus ensuring that it now has more followers and presumably therefore more influence than at Devin Nunes himself. Of course, Twitter does have rules against impersonation, targeted harassment and attacks motivated by bigotry. But in cases of parody, Jennifer Jacquet, assistant professor at NYU and author of Is Shame Necessary?, in pointing out that, like most bullies, they have thin skin, said it might be better for public figures to ignore criticism from little-known Twitter accounts instead of lashing out. "It's one thing if it's a fake account that looks legitimate," she said, "but this is a cow." She could, of course, have quoted Bart Simpson, who so presciently advised calm.
"Don't have a cow, man."
Exactly.
Betsy DeVos tried to justify her plan to strip all federal funding from the Special Olympics by saying they had to make some difficult decisions. It's a weird flex from Cruella DeVos, considering that the $17.6 million they gave last year represented only 1/40th of 1% of her department's budget. Uh-oh. If that's too hard to picture, just think of it as 5 Trump trips to Mar-a-Lago or half of one of Betsy's 10 yachts. But sure. Uh-oh. Why waste all that money improving the lives of people with intellectual and physical disabilities? They'll only blow it on hookers and wheelchairs.
Blimey, 5 trips to Mar-a-Lago cost that. You see, there is something to be said about making cruel nicknames. Cruella DeVos is brilliant.
Hi there. We're journalists on town for business, for a report we're doing, and we received a couple of death threats.
Yeah, we watched it progress over 24 hours to what you're seeing now, and that's a steady stream coming in every couple hours.
The voice there of our favourite bad at crime mastermind, Jacob Wall, reporting hate crimes against him to the Minneapolis Police Department in a new documentary. The tweets he's talking about say, "I hope you fucking know that if bump into you in Dinky Town or anywhere else in my city, I'm going to shoot you and shit on your fucking bodies. Get the fuck out of my city, you piece of shit, now." Pretty scary, especially the bump into you bit, because the eye is missing, except that they come from a fake account that Wall got booted off Twitter for creating. This alleged hate crimer can't spell his own surname, hates homophones, yes, homophones, hence presumably he's not knowing the difference between knowing your shit and knowing your shit. And the guy in the picture used has hired an attorney. We all wait in anticipation of the same 130,000 tons of bricks that fell on Jussie Smollett to fall on Wall. Worth holding our breath?
It was Mitt Romney's 72nd birthday this month, and thanks to a Twitter video of his staff presenting him with a cake made of Twinkies, we learned 2 things. 1, Mitt likes Twinkies, and 2, Mitt blows out his birthday candles like a fucking psychopath.
One at a time! It's like biting the heads of jelly babies, isn't it? One at a time. So the poor candle at the end is just waiting there, thinking, I'm going to burn completely away before you get there.
It's Who insane. Does that?
You kind of think he's had 71 goes at this already. Has nobody at any point said to him, Mitt, it would save a lot of time if you just took a deep breath and did them all. They're very close together. There's only three of them, Mitt. Just blow them at once, will you?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I hope at some stage his dad said to him, if you want to live to see another birthday, you're going to have to blow these things out. Donald Trump's 2020 campaign has some thoughts on who should and shouldn't be interviewed on television news programs. Axios's Jonathan Swan obtained a copy of a memo being sent from the Trump campaign to, and I quote, television producers. It says, moving forward, we ask that you employ basic journalistic standards when booking such guests to appear anywhere in your universe of productions. You should begin by asking the basic question, does this guest warrant further appearances in our programming, given the outrageous and unsupported claims made in the past? At a minimum, if these guests do reappear, you should replay the prior statements and challenge them to provide the evidence which prompted them to make the wild claims in the first place. And we Brits thought you Americans don't do irony.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. You can find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
And if you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. If you had a good time, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/ftrump.
You can also connect with us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.